You're listening to Midori House, first broadcast from the Danish Olympic Pavilion, Imagination Denmark, on the 8th of August 2012 on Monocle 24. Midori House is brought to you in association with Thailand.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of Midori House, broadcasting live from the summer house at the Danish Olympic Pavilion, Imagination Denmark, down at St. Catherine's Dock in the shadow of London's Tower Bridge, with me, Steve Bloomfield, and Sophie Grove.
Over the next hour, we'll be tackling the hot topic of handball with sports journalist and host Morten Ankerdal from the Danish television channel TV2.
We'll get a Danish reflection on what's been happening here in London during the Olympics with Michael Biera, London correspondent for Berlingske.
And we'll find out what the Olympics means for Danish diplomacy with Denmark's Deputy Ambassador to London, Kasper Berg Jensen.
Plus, we'll be setting sail in our longboat as we explore a little bit of ancient Viking culture.
All that, plus much more, here on Midori House, live from Imagination Denmark on Monocle 24. But first, let's cross back to the studio at Midori House for the news headlines with Jonathan Wheatley.
Monocle 24 News: African leaders of the Great Lakes region say they will impose sanctions on any party obstructing peace in the volatile Democratic Republic of Congo. The decision was reached at the end of a two-day leaders' summit on the conflict in Uganda. The leaders' meeting in Kampala said there had been a complete halt to the fighting. Uganda's Foreign Affairs Minister Henry Okello Oryem read the summit's closing resolution.
One, undertake vigorous efforts with a view to ensure that there is a complete halt to the fighting in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo without excluding the possibility of sanctions against those who obstruct the peace process. Two, to support the efforts of the government of the Democratic Republic of Congo in order to restore peace and security in the Eastern DRC, particularly in Northern Kivu province.
Troops loyal to President Bashar al-Assad have assaulted rebel strongholds in Aleppo today in one of their biggest ground attacks since rebels seized chunks of Syria's biggest city 3 weeks ago. By diverting military forces for an offensive to regain control there, President Assad has already allowed rebels to seize large swathes of countryside in the north. The 17-month uprising in Syria has created a refugee crisis in Turkey, Jordan and other neighbouring countries. At least three NATO soldiers and one Afghan civilian have been killed in a suicide attack in Assadabad today. Two civilians were also wounded before being taken to hospital in the capital of Afghanistan's eastern Kunar province. It comes as the United Nations reports today that civilian deaths have dropped 15% over the last 6 months. Deaths blamed on NATO-led troops and Afghan forces declined sharply. The first time in 5 years civilian casualties have declined. Well, Nicholas Haysom, the United Nations deputy director, said the numbers, while encouraging, were still too high.
Civilian deaths and injuries declined by 15% in the first 6 months of 2012. Despite this reduction in civilian casualties overall, conflict in Afghanistan continues to inflict a disproportionate and unacceptable toll on Afghan women, children and men.
A typhoon with winds of nearly 70 miles per hour has hit eastern China. Officials have ordered the evacuation of nearly 2 million people and hundreds of flights in Shanghai and other cities have been grounded. Meanwhile, a quarter of a million people in the Philippines have been forced into shelters as torrential rain triggered by that typhoon continues to batter the capital, Manila. The United States Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, near the end of her 11-day tour of Africa, has urged South Africa to promote democratic values. She also hoped that Pretoria could persuade Iran to drop its nuclear ambitions.
As the first country to voluntarily give up nuclear weapons, South Africa speaks with rare authority. You can most convincingly make the case that giving up nuclear weapons is a sign of strength, not weakness. And you can help ensure that any country that pursues nuclear weapons programs will invite only more pressure and isolation.
And finally, for the very first time, the Sydney Opera House will be playing host to a Broadway musical. The production of Rodgers and Hammerstein's South Pacific is part of controversial changes of direction to popularise the art form. So far, the new direction has been a financial success, with the overall funding for this year rising from $70 million to $100 million Australian dollars. And those are the stories at the top of the hour here on Monocle 24.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. You're listening to a very special edition of Midori House. Every day during the Olympics, we've been at a different Olympic venue, and today is no different. We're down at St. Catherine's Docks, which is just on the Thames. We can almost, if we peer out the window, see Tower Bridge. And we're broadcasting live from what I'm told we have to call Imagination Denmark.
It is. You don't need much imagination because it really feels so Danish. There are Vikings everywhere, which helps.
There are. And I liked how there was a big cheer just after I said Imagination Denmark. The reason why wasn't because I'd said that. It was because just behind us, we're in a little sort of summer house, just to set the scene, on the docks. And behind us, there's a little square with a massive screen. And they're showing the handball, Denmark versus Sweden. And it's quite a big match, isn't it, Soph?
It's epic. I mean, in the time we've been here, that a crowd has amassed and they're waving Danish flags. Their eyes are glued to a large screen, which we actually can't see.
I just had a quick look. If I sort of arch my back enough and sort of peer around the corner, I can see that it's Denmark 1, Sweden 1 after, hang on, how long? 6 minutes. There we are.
Oh, wow. It's a really action-packed game, as we're going to hear. The room we're in is so beautiful. It's kind of... It's so Danish. It feels like we're on a little mini break together.
And there's lovely little boats. There's a little... I can see a Viking boat just out there, sort of rocking gently in the dock.
There's a wood-burning stove. And an ergonomic pizza oven outside. There couldn't be more beautiful things surrounding us. And even the glasses, sort of some amazing design I've never seen before. So we feel very lucky.
We do indeed. We're going to be sort of learning a little bit more about this summer house that we're in a little bit later. We're also going to sort of hear a bit more about the food and the drink that's outside there. And fear not, because I know that you were wondering, do I listen to Midori House or do I watch Denmark, Sweden and the handball? You can do both, because we will be giving you live updates throughout the show in this crucial quarterfinal match between Denmark and Sweden.
Phew. Well, it's 7 minutes past the hour here. You're listening to Monocle 24.
The Olympics on Monocle 24.
As Olimpíadas estão chegando a Monocle 24.
Olimpiski teigrissa pu Monocle 24.
Lontosta maailmalle Monocle 24.
El alaava l'Olimpia tähti ilal Monocle 24.
Die Olympischen Spiele auf Monaco 24.
Shooting Olympique at Monaco 24.
The Olympics on Monaco 24.
Welcome back to a special Midori House. Now, Denmark's 113-strong Olympic team are not the only high-profile Danes to come to London for the Games. Pretty much every member of the royal family, plus the Prime Minister, have also made the trip. They're here for a bit of soft power diplomacy, a bit of athlete supporting, and a bit of glad handing.
A little earlier, we caught up with Denmark's Deputy Ambassador, Kasper Høgh Jensen. That's before he headed up off to the copper box for the handball to find out whether Denmark's performance so far met expectations.
No, but we are extremely pleased. Just today we got the 9th medal, so we are above our target. The official target was exactly 8, and 2 of them has been gold, so we're extremely pleased. And actually we haven't had that many medals since London 1948, so I think we're very pleased.
And rather aptly, you're doing well on the rowing. I've seen the Danes steaming ahead down at Eton Dorney.
Yeah.
Tell us about success on water first.
Well, I can tell you, I mean, I was actually with the Danish Prime Minister and it was quite fantastic. We went to Wembley Arena where we saw the men's double in badminton. They went to a 3-setter and they just made it, which was basically a silver medal. And then we drove on down to Eton and we just made it onto the stands while the rowing was going on and from the middle. And we saw the Danish rowing and they made it on the last 100 meters. They got the gold. And this was our first gold medal. So the PM was there, the Queen was there. It was a good day. It was Super Saturday. We got 1 gold and 2 silvers on that day. So that was a good day.
Congratulations. Also, we should say, there are lots of amazing boats where we are today.
Yeah.
You're representing a sort of different
element of Danish culture and some of the history. Your rowing heritage is here too. Tell us about that and what you're trying to do with the sort of historical reenactments.
Well, I mean, here we are in St. Catherine's Dock, and this is of course in London, but it's a little piece of Denmark here. I mean, you look at the boats, you look at the ocean, you could be in Denmark. We were in a Danish summer house, the wooden floor, the big windows, the light, the nice design. So I think in that sense, there's plenty of people around in the area, and it's basically a place to attract tourists to go to Denmark. So this is a exhibit of what we can do. We can do nice food, we can do nice summer houses as this one. And in Denmark, the ocean and the sea is always there, and also the rowing. So that's why we have medals in rowing and also in sailing. The ninth medal today was the 49ers down in Weymouth. So yeah, so that's very good.
And you mentioned the Danish Prime Minister has been here. The Queen and the Crown Prince have also been here on the Danish Royal Yacht.
Yeah.
I mean, is that just in terms of sort of, you know, showing a little bit of support for Danish competitors, or is there actually something broader, something more important about their presence here?
No, the royal family wants to support the Danish athletes, and I think it's wise and right decision. They have been doing so for many years. The first time the Royal Yacht Danevo was in the Olympics was in Athens in 2004, and our Crown Prince Frederik is part of the IOC. So, you know, the royal family is really engaged in this, and they have been around on many of the sports events, and it has been noticed back home that the royal family is supporting the athletes so much. And honestly, I mean, for the athletes, it's important. I mean, to see that the Queen is there and the PM is there, sitting there, cheering on them. I mean, it boosts their efforts. I'm pretty sure about that. So it's good. And they are staying on the Royal Yard in Canary Wharf. And the Queen is leaving tomorrow. Her husband has been here for many days. Also, the Crown Prince and Princess Mary are here for most of the period. His brother Prince Joachim is coming Friday. So you know, there's a really
pretty much everyone.
Yeah, pretty much everyone. Also, Princess Benedicta, who has a daughter riding in Greenwich. So everyone is here.
I love that. Why stay at the Ritz or anywhere else when you can import your own royal yacht?
Yeah, you should go see it. It's a beautiful ship.
I have seen it, and it is a very beautiful ship. It's in a slightly incongruous setting because it's a beautiful yacht, and yet it's right in the heart of Canary Wharf. And it's overshadowed, only in terms of size, not obviously prestige, by two massive yachts owned by billionaires.
Yeah.
But yours certainly has more of a touch of class.
No, exactly. I mean, it's an old ship. You can see, of course, it's not as big as some of the other yachts, but it's a historical ship. You can see the old wood and the material and the quality. You have the cadets there lined up in white, and it's a beautiful ship. It's well, and you can walk by and have a look. I would certainly recommend that.
And Casper, tell us about where you're heading off to now. We know you've got a date over at the handball, where you're cheering on the Danish team.
Yeah.
Handball is a bit of an enigma to some people. I mean, it's very popular in Denmark, certainly, and other countries, Nordic countries. It's quite new to the UK. It's really a strong sport, and do you think you might win today? That's basically what
I hope
I'm
we asking. Will win. I mean, and to add to the tension, we will have to beat Sweden, and it's the quarterfinal. And
it's a clash of the Titans.
It's a clash of the Titans, yes. But we won the European Champions last year, and in this sense, I hope we will win. I saw Iceland beat Sweden some days ago in the copper box. So and I have seen the Danes play several times, and I think even though they have had difficulties against Croatia and last against Korea, I think they will find the good spirit and win. Certainly that's what I hope.
That was Casper Høgh Jensen, Denmark's deputy ambassador to London, and I can tell you that the latest score is Sweden 4, Denmark 3. Very close, very close.
You're listening to Midori House live from Denmark Olympic Pavilion at St. Catherine's Docks.
Modern Thailand is on the move. Take transport. We're building urban mass transit systems and a $15.4 billion high-speed rail link that will crisscross the country faster than ever before. We've even developed a solar-powered prototype of our famous tuk-tuks for a greener urban journey. And if you think that sounds good, wait until you hear our homegrown teapot. To find out more, visit modern-thailand.com.
Perfect accompaniment to summer is a well-mixed cocktail, so as the season hits its stride, we handpicked a trio of bartenders from around the world to prepare for us, their cocktail du jour. From Tokyo to São Paulo via Beirut, we filmed the maestros at work, headlining the Yoshida Martini, the Lychee Caipirinha, and the Aromatic Smash. Pull up a bar stool for a front row seat. Monocle Films on monocle.com.
You are listening to Midori House on Monocle 24, live from Imagination Denmark.
And as they said, this is a special edition of Midori House, broadcasting live from Imagination Denmark on the day 8 of our special Olympic shows. And it's a very appropriate location because, as I might have mentioned before, tonight is a huge night for the Danish men's handball team. The latest score is 5-4 to Sweden at the Copper Box in the Olympic Park.
The handball match is very much underway and the crowd are a string of Danish diplomats and VIPs, and as you might be able to hear at St. Catherine's Docks, London's Danish community are on the edge of their seats watching the game. To hear more about the importance of the sport in Denmark and reflect on the nation's Olympic success so far, we caught up earlier with Morten Ankerdal, TV host and sports journalist for the Danish channel TV2.
Morten, thank you very much for joining us, for taking time out from just over the water where you're where you've been hosting all day on TV2, and welcome to Midori House.
Thank you very much.
Now, first of all, tell us a little bit about your setup here, because here in the Danish Pavilion, you've set up your own TV studios, haven't you?
You know, we bought the rights for the Olympics 9 years ago, and 2 years ago we started the preparations. We were actually supposed to have a studio by the Tower Hill, called the place over here called Devon House, but our commercial apartment found this spot, this St. Catherine Docks, and we got really in love with this place, and we saw the potential in having our live broadcasting from this spot, because this is really Danish. In Denmark, we have something called the Royal Spot in the middle of Copenhagen, and now we got a mini spot in the middle of London. This is a place where we can salute the Danish athletes when they won a medal, and we do so, and it's great. But we only had one problem. There is no space for a TV studio on the spot. So we had to move on the water. So we have built our own houseboat. It has a weight about 120 ton. And we had put all the TV equipment in the basement. And then we have built the TV studio on the first floor. But since it's been such a success with this little spot, we are moving out on the small plaza just to do this live broadcasting when, for instance, the Danish handball team is playing in about...
Which they will be during this show, yes.
Yeah, and you know, there's going to be a fantastic atmosphere here, because maybe 1,500 or 2,000 Danish people, if they want to watch Denmark play handball, and a lot of people do that in Denmark, I can tell you, they can only come here. They can't see it in BBC or anywhere else, because handball is big in Denmark, but it's not big in Europe, it's not big in the world.
Well, on that point, I want to confess I don't know very much about handball, and a lot of people don't in the UK. In fact, we had to scramble a team, especially for the Olympics, and I understand they have a Danish coach.
Yeah.
But can you explain to us the rules and the concept of the game? It looks to me a bit like a mixture between football and basketball, where you can use your hand too.
Yeah, in the complexity, you have to sort of look at American football, because you have a lot of tactic. You have 14 players on the field on the same time, 7 players from each team. And there are very little spot, there are very little room for these big men who are moving around.
Around the size of a basketball court.
Yeah, it is, it is. And it's a very fast game, and you can only run three steps with the ball, then you have to throw it to another one, or you have to sort of dribble it in the court. So you really have to think, and a lot of people have to think the same thoughts at the same time. That's why it's so complex for instance Great Britain to play it, because you know, we invented the game, we've been playing it for more than 100 years, and we have sort of educated players since they were like 5, 6, 7, 8 years old. So you don't just play this game, even though you have maybe 10 years to prepare it. But on the other hand, you get one goal per minute. So there's always action, a lot of big chewing and hewing, because people can see, now they're leading, now they're leading. It's changing all the time. So it's perfect for television, and it only takes 1 hour. That's good.
and obviously, it's been very big at the Olympics, and there's obviously European Championships and World Championships as well. I mean, is there a domestic game as well? Do people on a Saturday afternoon or Saturday evening say, all right, I'm off to the handball to see Copenhagen play?
As I can tell, in Denmark at the moment, we are preparing for the game tonight. It's a quarterfinal against Sweden. And as soon as that match begins, around 2.5 million Danish people will watch this game. And we are only 5 million in Denmark, you must remember. So it's huge in Denmark.
And in terms of sort of spreading the word about handball, do you think it's going to get more popular now it's had such coverage in the Olympics? I mean, people seem to be quite in love with handball.
Yeah, but you know, I think it will, but they will also find out that it's very complicated. So that's why the problem is, you can't just play it. The Americans loved it in 84 when we were at the LA, but they tried to play it afterwards, but it was so difficult. So even though they tried to use some basketball players, they couldn't really do it.
And just one final thing, I want to ask a bit about your coverage back in Denmark. Do you, like most countries, focus pretty much on the Danish athletes? Are there also sort of some big races, like say the 100 meters final or the big swimming events, which you also cover as well?
Yeah, we do follow the Danes, and we do follow athletics. We do follow swimming. That's very big in Denmark, but Denmark is also good at swimming, but we are hopeless at the Olympic Stadium. We are doing rubbish, but we are following it because we think it's great, and that's what the Olympics about.
That was Morten Ankerdal, TV host and sports journalist for Danish channel TV2.
Now, keeping things Danish now, of course, it's time to hear from electro soul duo Quadron. This is their song, Pressure. And that was Pressure by the Danish act Quadron. You're listening to Monocle 24.
We're joined now by Michael Bjerre, London correspondent for the Danish daily Berlingske. Michael has been writing a daily column from London since the Olympics began, giving a Dane's reflection on some of the more intriguing aspects of the Games and everything surrounding it. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you.
Now, one of the things you've been writing about is there's a cheer behind me. We'll give you a handball update. Don't you worry. I know you're waiting for it. We'll give you a handball update. But Michael, you've been one of the things you've been writing about that you found quite interesting has been how the Danish royal family has been received while they've been here. What has their visit really meant for people back in Denmark?
Yeah, but it's quite fantastic to see our royal family coming around like this in London. They have actually, almost all of them have been here, and they have been all over. It's been almost impossible to go anywhere without seeing our royal family. And they have been very supporting for our athletes at the stadiums, and that has been quite fantastic for Danish people to see.
And Michael, it feels like eons ago now, but I wondered how the Danish public received the opening ceremony. Quite a wacky offering there. Did you enjoy it? Did the Danish public like it?
It was simply fantastic. But I also think, you know, the man behind Slumdog Millionaire, he had to do something spectacular, and he really did. So a lot of people have been talking about it was fantastic, even though I also heard some people said it was very British. Maybe sometimes a little bit too self-promoting, but at the same time, very spectacular and very fantastic.
And in terms of the other things that you found interesting, I mean, have there been particular things that you felt have resonated with a Danish audience about how the games have taken place here in London?
Yeah, it's what I heard. You know, when we are talking about audience here, people who've been coming to London, a lot of people are talking about this very, very positive atmosphere, and that's what I recognized myself. That, you know, on the stadiums, normally you would see people, the audience would give applause to the winners, but they have even been given applause to the losers. And it has been quite fantastic to see sometimes when people are really losing heavily, then they get a big applause. And that has been quite fantastic.
We have to get used to doing that here in British sports. So we've had some practice. I wondered also, in terms of I mean, the Danish sports, we've talked a lot about handball, but you've done really well in the rowing. And I wondered whether or not that's been a big focus back in Denmark in terms of spectator sport. Has the focus really been on Eton Dorning this week?
It has been on different sports, of course. I also hear that the Danish audiences are also very interested in all kinds of other sports than the sports that they are where we are good. But of course, the handball, what we can hear behind us, is a big thing.
We kind of, I can just give you bring you slightly up to speed. It's currently 9-8 to Sweden, I'm afraid. Oof. But don't worry, there's still plenty of time. We haven't even reached the second half yet. Now, you've been based in London for 3 years, and obviously I'm sure the Olympics has been a little bit of the story you've been working on here, even from long before that. Aside from what's happening over these 2 weeks, I mean, what are the sorts of stories that you tend to be writing here that really excite your readers back in Denmark?
It is, now we talked about a little bit before about the applause at the stadiums and things like that, but I also think that the IOC and London, who created this Olympics, have been extremely good. They have created a positive atmosphere. What I have noticed from the beginning is that when you walk from the stations to the arenas, you have people, employees, who are saying positive things to people when they pass, making them cheer, and things like that. So there has been a very, very positive atmosphere and energy. And I'm quite sure that the next time we will see Olympics, that they will copy that, because I haven't seen that before.
And do you get a sense that the attitude towards London as a city, or the image of London as a city, has changed as a result of this?
I'm quite sure that I don't think that Danish people think that that London has been a rude city to come to or anything. There's a lot of Danish tourists coming here.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
If you stand on the left, yeah.
Yes, that's true. But it has surely it has been giving a lot of positive energy and a good feeling of British people. Yes.
And in terms of the architecture, the sort of infrastructure, do you think that people are giving the thumbs up to London in terms of organisation? Do they think it's been an impressive show on that front?
For sure.
And what about, I was talking to a Danish friend of mine who was saying, actually, she thought it was very corporate, some of the Olympics, and whether or not, you know, in Nordic countries they might do it a little bit differently. There's a lot of McDonald's around. Is that something that everyone can just put up with, or do you think that the Danish public really don't like that type of thing?
Do you mean about the McDonald's thing? And no, I don't think it's a big issue, really. I don't think so.
Okay. Michael Biera, London correspondent for Berlingske, thank you very much for joining us here on Monocle 24.
In the next half hour of the programme, we'll be getting a tour of our surroundings and trying out some Viking food.
But first, let's hand back over to the studio for the news headlines with Jonathan Wheatley.
Thanks very much. African leaders of the Great Lakes region say they'll impose sanctions on any party obstructing peace in the volatile Democratic Republic of Congo. The decision was reached at the end of a two-day leaders' summit on the conflict in the capital, Kampala, in Uganda. Troops loyal to President Bashar al-Assad have assaulted rebel strongholds in Aleppo today in one of their biggest ground attacks since rebels seized chunks of Syria's biggest city 3 weeks ago. The 17-month uprising in Syria has created a refugee crisis in Turkey, Jordan and other neighbouring countries. At least three NATO soldiers and one Afghan civilian have been killed in a suicide attack in Assadabad today. Two civilians were also wounded before being taken to hospital in the capital of Afghanistan's eastern Kunar province. It comes as the United Nations reports today that civilian deaths have actually dropped 15% over the last 6 months. A typhoon with winds of nearly 70 miles an hour has hit eastern China. Officials have ordered the evacuation of nearly 2 million people. Meanwhile, a quarter of a million people in the Philippines have been forced into shelters as torrential rain triggered by that typhoon continues to batter the capital, Manila. And the US Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, near the end of her 11-day tour of Africa, has urged South Africa to promote democratic values. She also hoped that Pretoria could persuade Iran to drop its nuclear ambitions. And those are the stories for the moment here on Monocle 24.
Thank you very much, Jonathan Wheatley. This is a special edition of Midori House, coming to you live from the Imagination Denmark Pavilion at St Catherine's Dock in East London. Now, before we move on to our next guest, we're going to cross live to our sports reporter on the scene at the handball, Adrian Craddock. Adrian, what's going on?
Thanks, Steve. I'm standing out here amongst a group of very excited Danes. It's been a pretty tight match so far. You know, it hasn't got, you know, between about one or two goals between them the whole match. The Swedes have just broken loose. It's now 10-8. And it's a pretty good vibe out here. The thing that I can smell at the moment is just kind of toasted onions. Everyone's just having these hot dogs and chilling out. It's a great vibe out here. And it seems like the Danes have just defended another goal. Let's hope they can bring it through.
Thank you very much, Adrian.
Now, as we've already been discussing, we're lucky enough to be in a very special location today. Our show is coming to you from a pop-up Danish holiday home filled to the brim with Danish furniture and design.
And to talk us through our surroundings and give us some more history in the evolution of Danish design, we're joined by Birgitte Bjerregaard, editor of Living Home, the design project who set up this house. Birgitte, thank you so much for welcoming us into your lovely home.
Well, thank you for coming.
Now, first of all, can you just give us a little bit of an insight into, before we get into what's inside mm-hmm. this house, just how easily this whole thing was put up? Because I understand you did this whole structure in pretty much a day.
Well, yes, we set up the house in one day, and the whole house was built in Denmark in 2.5 weeks. And we took the furniture over here in a container and decorated in with nice Danish design. The house is actually made up of 11 parts. It's a passive house, which meaning that it's very well isolated, and we have some energy solutions, sustainable energy solutions with it. We have a water tank being heated up by a solar energy, and some circulation also heated by solar energy. And inside the house,
I was just going to ask you. Yeah. We're sitting on some of the most wonderful furniture, and everything is Danish. And I was wanting to just ask you about some of the things that are here today. It's kind of like a sort of mini sort of embassy for design, really. Yeah. And there's so many different sort of stars of the Danish design scene. Can you tell us about a few that are represented here? What are we sitting on, firstly?
Yeah. Well, we are sitting on a 50-year-old chair. It is made from J.L. Müller in Aarhus in Denmark, and it was designed by the owner actually 50 years back, and that's the idea is that we thought we would just show a little selection of good Danish design. It's not necessarily new. Well, for instance, this lamp from Louise Campbell is brand new from Louis Poulsen, and then there's a lamp from the 70s. But the main thing was when you come in here, you should feel at home. That's why we call it Living Home, and people should feel like I would like to move in here. And luckily, that's the response we get. Yeah.
It feels very cozy, and you feel like you are a little bit on holiday, mainly because you've got a screen, a high-definition screen showing the beach in Denmark. But also, it's kind of an education in design. I mean, a lot of people know about Hans Wenger or some design, Danish design, but not really some of the new up-and-coming designers. For instance, the amazing textiles you have today. Yes. Who are they by?
They are by Pernille Holm, a textile designer who is extremely inspired by nature and also the organic shapes and trying to... Well, it's very three-dimensional, as you can see, and sort of trying to create a connection between outdoor and indoor. She has decorated some of the big hotels in Copenhagen, and also for theatre, stuff like that. She's very talented and upcoming.
And I hear that you've also been serving champagne to the gold medalists for the Danish team in these beautiful glasses. Yes, and the glassware here is quite staggering.
Isn't it beautiful? It's very feminine, you might say. It's shaped like a Gine, or you may say an over-dimensionalized Grappa glass. But all the medalists, they come in here sailing in a Nordic cruiser, which we brought here, and they have champagne from these glasses, which are not yet for sale. They have just come out, and we are the first to use them, actually.
Well, let's hope you get to use those champagne glasses with more gold medalists later on in the week. Birgitte Bjerregaard, editor of Living Home and our host today, thank you very much for guiding us through some Danish design. Now, part of the pavilion here at St. Catherine's Dock is here to showcase some of Denmark's most iconic brands, and there are a few more famous than Lego. So also joining us now here in the Summer House is Warren Elsmore, who is a Lego artist and heads up the Lego exhibit here. Warren, thank you very much for joining us today.
Oh, very glad to be here.
Now, talk us through your really quite spectacular design. You've got just a little bit, about 50 yards away from where we are.
So what we've done is Lego wanted something iconic and something eye-catching, and we thought, what better to do than recreate the Olympic Stadium and, in fact, the entire Olympic Park in Lego. So I've created four of them. It's a 1 to 500 scale model of the Olympic Park with all of the main stadiums in there. And people can come up, have a look at it and see where they've been or where they're going to go later on in the week.
Or if they haven't got any tickets, where they wish they could be.
A few people have said that's the closest they're going to get to the Olympic flame, yes.
And there's an amazing sort of windmill made from Lego too. Did you import that from Denmark? How did that even come about?
Yes, the windmill is actually a sort of cooperation between Lego and a few other Danish companies. It's the largest or the tallest working Lego windmill in the world. It's just tops out at just over 7 meters. And it is, if you come down here, you can see it working. It's going round. And it's fully made out of Lego as well.
And it works so well, you don't actually notice it's Lego to start with.
No, it's a very clever design. It's actually made out of Lego, but looks like a real windmill. If you look closer, you'll see it's made out of what looks like big Lego bricks. And if you look even closer, you'll realise the big Lego bricks are made out of normal-sized Lego bricks.
Now, let's go back to the stadium itself. Or the Olympic Park itself, what were the really difficult bits to do? Were there any that you just thought, OK, how on earth am I going to do that bit?
The stadium itself was pretty tough, being an oval, having everything at various angles, two things that, you know, are tough to recreate in Lego. The one that, I'll be honest, I didn't think we were going to be able to do was the orbit.
That's the one I was kind of aiming for, yeah.
Yeah, I left the orbit until last because I thought that one's either going to work or we're just not going to come up with a way of doing it. In the end, if you see it, we have managed to do it. It's made of tubing that Lego use in some models, and then connecting the tubing together, you have to look pretty closely. There's 500 hands from Lego minifigures, so we had to take a whole bunch of minifigures, pull off all their hands, and use that to connect the tubing.
Sounds a bit brutal.
It is. I've got about 250 minifigures at home with no hands now.
Oh, minifigures. But on more of a serious note, how synonymous do you think Lego really is with the Danish identity, and do you feel that you really are sort of representing Danish interest in many ways when you're sort of promoting Lego?
I think definitely. I mean, it's a big Danish export, has been for over 50 years now. And it's still very much a Danish family company based in the town of Billund, right in the centre of Denmark. So it's really nice to be able to bring it out and actually show the best of Denmark, show quite a few people here don't realise that Lego is a Danish company. They think it's a big multinational corporate company based in the US or something like that, when no, it's a nice family Danish company with a good family atmosphere.
And how does this this work of art, and I think it's quite right to call it a work of art, compare with other projects that you've worked on, I mean, in terms of its complication or the excitement around it?
Well, I do a variety of projects. I do a lot of commercial commissions. I've arranged Lego events and things like that as well, but it was really, really great to be able to do something with the Olympics. I'm based here in the UK. I'm actually based in Edinburgh. So when the chance came up to actually be down in London during the Olympics, do something iconic, I just jumped at it. It's great.
And here's a big question. What happens with it after the Games? Please tell me it's not going to just be pulled apart. Because, look, no. I'm not entirely sure if I've got space for it, but I will make space.
Bid for the Lego Games, really, Steve.
No, I can promise you we're not going to take it apart. We don't know, is the honest answer. It was built, you know, I built it specifically for the Olympics. So who knows, somebody might buy it, it might go on public display somewhere. Open to ideas at this point.
Okay, if anyone has any ideas, get in touch with us at Monocle and we'll pass them on. Warren Ellsmore, thank you very much for joining us and creating such a wonderful addition to everything here at Imagination Denmark. Thanks. You're listening to a special edition of Midori House.
The Olympics on Monocle 24.
As Olimpíadas estão chegando a Monocle 24.
Olimpíadas de Igreja por Monocle 24.
Lontosta maailmalle, Monocle 24.
Die Olympischen Spiele auf Monocle 24.
The Olympics on Monocle 24.
It wouldn't be a Danish event without a few Vikings, and sure enough, there are several on site, complete with a huge replica Viking boat, which is docked just next to where we're sitting here in our pop-up holiday home. Earlier, we dispatched Monocle's Adrian Craddock to meet some Vikings, set sail on said boat, and learn a bit more about Viking history, Viking food, and indeed, Viking fighting.
I'm wearing a traditional Viking trousers and shirt. They are reconstructed from excavated clothes from the Viking Age.
When you look at the Olympics and look at like the sailing, as a professional boat maker, what do you think when you're watching stuff like that?
Well, for example, the 49er class, well, it expressed very much how you think as a boat builder. You always try to optimize your boat, and that's what's very clearly shown in the Olympics. Continuously developing, thinking, how can I do it better? How can I develop the hull? What can I do? Placing the mast in a different way, bigger sails. All the time developing. You have to be a good craftsman. The last thing you have to think of when you are going to sleep, if you're not with your wife or a nice girl, is how to make the boat faster, more beautiful, all the time.
Welcome to the Viking ship.
You've very kindly brought out a lunch for us. We're sitting on a Danish Viking boat at St. Catherine's Dock. Can you describe what is in the lunch?
Wild mushrooms, chicken, bacon, and different herbs, apple, all ingredients that they had at the Viking Age.
Okay, tell us about the fish.
Yeah, it's a mackerel that they caught in the North Seas and smoked, because then it could be fresh for a long time. They could eat it when they came to Dublin and came to Newfoundland, where they were as well.
Absolutely.
Actually, they discovered America 500 years before Columbus.
When you brought the food out, you mentioned that, you know, it was eaten by people that were, you know, rowing all the time on these warships like the one we're sitting on, and that it was very important for them to kind of, you know, have the strength to row all the time.
Yeah.
Do you think this menu reflects that? I mean, do you think it's very high in protein, perhaps?
It's actually not as high as protein as it should have been mm-hmm. when they had to row from Denmark to England. Mm-hmm. It should have been much more fat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but before, you know, this would have been really kind of heavy food,
yes.
You know, almost
much
built for
heavy.
Almost built for athletes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
So do you think perhaps, you know, the Danish Olympic team at the moment, they almost have a head start with this kind of food, because, you know, they
probably.
Have a
probably they have that.
It's a secret weapon.
Yes.
Yeah, my name is Kenneth, and I come from Denmark. I'm in Viking theater.
My name is David, and I'm also from Frederikssund Viking theater.
Camilla, the woman we had with us, she defeated the giant warrior with a piece of cloth, and I had a knife, and I still lost.
What about the weapons that you guys use? They look like they're, you know, traditional Danish kind of Viking weapons.
They are. It's replicas from different finds around in Europe and in Denmark.
What kind of stuff are you using?
We're using traditional swords and daggers, and spears, shields, hands,
axes.
Do you ever hurt yourself, you know, in training? Because I imagine, you know, there's metal swinging around, there's shields. What's going on?
Yeah, we have quite a bit of scars all over the body, because when you get hit, it really hurts.
But no one's actually died, I assume. You know, not like today. Not in the play.
No, there's nothing more than a couple of stitches, then you are okay again.
Just finally,
looking at the Danish Olympic team, is this kind of at the heart of Danish athleticism? This kind of, you know, traditional idea of fighting as Vikings. Do you think this has got a big thing to do with it?
The athletic had Viking blood. They always fight. Yeah. Fight to the last.
That was Monocle's Adrian Craddock there sampling some Viking food. And at halftime, it's 11-8 to Sweden in the handball.
At one of the world's busiest seaports, Laem Chabang, it's easy to see why Thailand is such a dynamic trading hub. With our entrepreneurial, multi-skilled workforce, we're busy making sure vital goods get to market on time, every time. It's this hands-on approach that's made us the globe's fifth largest container shipping nation. But it's not only goods we're exporting. Our pop music is a big hit too. To find out more, visit modern-thailand.com.
You are listening to Midori House on Monocle 24, live from Imagination Denmark.
And as she said, this is Midori House live from Imagination Denmark at St. Catherine's Dock on Monocle 24 with me, Steve Bloomfield, and Sophie Grove.
Now, it's every athlete's dream to win a medal at the Olympic Games. You train intensively for 4, sometimes 8 years, but you only have one chance to succeed.
So is it any wonder that when they do get to the podium, many athletes respond with a raw display of emotion? Athletes at this year's Olympics definitely have not been afraid to shed a tear. Parts of the British media have even called London 2012 the crying games.
And to help us understand the psychology of sporting success and dealing with the pressures before, during and after winning a medal, we're joined by sports psychologist Victor Thompson. Victor, welcome to Midori House.
Hello.
So tell us, firstly, we can deal with the issue of crying. When you are advising an athlete, how do you discuss this idea of sort of celebration? You see a lot of sort of, you know, absolute celebration, and then you see people weeping. Is this something that is sort of inevitable after an Olympic sort of, you know, competition?
Well, as you've said, people have trained for 8 years, up to 20 years in some cases, to perform on the biggest stage, and it's been a goal for a long time and a very important goal, the most important thing in their life. And I don't think it's anything you can prepare for unless you've won medals in major championships before. It's just it's a raw reaction, and either you've achieved your dream or you've fallen short, and there's an emotional reaction, and that's just normal, and it's nothing to be ashamed about, whether you're crying or screaming or whatever. It's just a normal event.
But there does seem to have been certainly more prominent crying this time, whether that's Sir Chris Hoy winning his sixth gold medal and breaking down pretty much before he even stood on the podium, or of course Felix Sanchez, who won the 400 metres hurdles, who was in floods of tears before he even got anywhere near the podium. Has it sort of surprised you how much sort of lip quivering there's been this time around?
I think it's great that we've seen it, especially from men more this time than maybe from women. And, you know, it shows how much people have put into their sport and the pressure for the home nation, particularly over the last few years with all the media attention to perform. And especially if you are the favourite, then if you do anything other than win, it's seen as a failure. And I think it's relief often more than anything else for the favourites when they win. And I think it's great that sharing emotions is a bit more normal nowadays and a bit more accepted. Why not?
And in terms of sports psychologists in general, there's been a lot of reference to them during this Games. I mean, even when people are congratulating their family, their boyfriends, they sometimes refer to them. You see people even texting their sports psychologists, you know, in between heats. I wondered, you know, are you really indispensable to modern athletes now?
I think you are a key member of the support staff, and just like a physio or a nutritionist, you will help different athletes more or less depending on the athlete. And we shouldn't be somebody that's hidden away. We should be readily accessible and valuable to the athletes. So if athletes need to draw on us, like sports nutrition or physio, we should be available, and it's great that we can help people at the most important show.
And just finally, I want to ask about sleeping as well, because there's been a big issue, certainly with a lot of the swimmers have really been struggling to sleep before they've been competing, particularly the Australian ones. Mm-hmm. I mean, is there something specific there that, you know, they can't take any real sleeping pills, obviously, because there's all sorts of drug issues. How do you get to go to sleep before the big event?
Well, you might not. is the short answer, and that's normal. It's normal to be more stressed and therefore more physically aroused by what's going on. So you're less likely to be feeling sleepy in sleep. And if you view that as normal, then you can use the time to rest and relax rather than to stress and get wind up and then end up exhausted at your event.
Victor Thompson, sports psychologist, thank you very much. While we've been talking, Denmark have dragged themselves back into this match. It's now Sweden 11, Denmark 10. This is Midori House live from St. Catherine's Dock on the River Thames here on Monocle 24.
The Olympics on Monocle 24.
As Olimpíadas estão chegando a Monocle 24.
Olimpíadas de igreja para Monocle 24.
Lontosta maailmalle, Monocle 24.
الألعاب الأولمبية تأتي إلى المونوكول 24.
دي أولمبيسن سبيلة في مونوكول 24.
شوتين أولمبيكا في مونوكول 24.
دي أولمبيكس على مونوكول 24.
You're back with Midori House, live from St. Catherine's Dock. Now, I'm joined by a troupe, of Viking musicians. We told you there were a few Vikings here, and we are sort of surrounded by amazing recreations of Viking civilization. But Mia Goldhammer, welcome to Monocle 24. I wanted to ask you, firstly, what you're going to sing for us and what you've been singing today. I saw you outside all holding hands. Are these traditional songs that you're singing?
Yeah, it's traditional songs. In Denmark, we have the hugest collection of all traditional ballads in Northern Europe. And this it goes along with chain dancing. So it's a song we're going to sing for you now. It's, I think...
Well, you might want to introduce your co-workers, your band.
Yeah.
You're playing the... Which instrument is this?
The one that I've taken with me today is a dulcimer. So, yeah, sounds like...
And it's a sort of hollow wooden, sort of violin-esque, sort of... It looks a bit like a boat as well.
Yeah, it looks like a boat, and you have it on your lap.
Excellent. And this song is going to be, it's a love song.
Yeah.
So it's can you just give us a little bit of an insight into what it's about?
It's called I Dreamt Me a Dream This Night. And it's all about this young woman that's sleeping. So she dreams that she meets other young people. And they go to a dance. And there they dance around. She's dressed in a very nice dress, of course. And she meets...
We don't want you to just talk about it, we want you to actually play it as well. So you're actually going to play us out. That's all we have time for today. Thanks to everyone here at Imagination Denmark. You've all been absolutely wonderful. The latest score for the handball, I know you want to know, it's Sweden 12, Denmark 11, still a long time to go. Thanks to Casey Bilboa, to Adrian Craddock, to Paul Noble, to Alex Funnel. We're going to be in Switzerland tomorrow. Well, the House of Switzerland. But for now, I'm Steve Bloomfield.
And I'm Sophie Grove.
And to play us out, here's Mia Goldhammer.
Drømte mig en drøm i nat om silke og ærlig bæl. Bare en dragt så let og glat i solfaldets strålevæl. Nu vågner den klare morgen til de unges flok jeg gik. Jeg drogs mod sang og dans. Trøstigt mødte jeg hans blik og lagde min hånd i hans. Nu vågner den klare morgen. Alle andre til os så, de smilede og de lå. Snart gik dansen helt i stå, der dansede kun os to. Nu vågner den klare morgen. Drømte mig en drøm i nat om silke og ærlig pæl. Fjernt han hilste med sin hat, og snart gik min drøm på hel. Nu vågner den klare morgen.